You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Talking with Heather Borman Morris. She's the founding director of Borman Counseling. She's a trauma therapist, and we are discussing covert narcissists and how it relates to true crime and many of the cases that we cover here, but also just kind of diving into that world and getting an insight into that mindset. Her new book, 1,000 Paper Cuts, is available wherever books are sold. What I find interesting and something I've recently learned about just our brains and how we function is we're much more likely, and correct me if I'm wrong on this or if I'm stating it incorrectly, people are more likely to hang on if there's the chance that something will get better, the maybe factor, like maybe they'll do this, maybe this will happen, versus an absolute, versus a this is going to happen at this point and we know that's going to happen at that point. We're more likely to sit there and subject ourselves to a maybe, to a breadcrumb, versus knowing that, hey, the big buffet's over here with everything, but I'm going to hang on for that breadcrumb. It's very interesting that that's how we function, at least healthy individuals function. I mean, even though it's an unhealthy, you know, way of thinking.
There are studies done back in the 1950s by B.F. Skinner, and it's a study where there were mice, and in one cage, the mice pressed a button, and every time they pressed the button, they got food. And in the other cage, they pressed a button, and sometimes they would get the food, and sometimes they wouldn't get the food. And then at some point, the second phase, they stopped giving food at all. The mice who got food every time they pressed the button stopped pressing the button after two or three times. Because they expected, right? There's no food. Okay, this doesn't work anymore. The ones who had that intermittent reinforcement where sometimes there would be food, they just kept going back to the button and didn't stop because they didn't know when the good thing was going to come. So they're going to keep trying. We also have neuroscience now to back that up, that we know that there's more dopamine released in the anticipation of a loving action than there is during the loving action. And that's what covert narcissists feed off of. That's how they control their targets.
How interesting. What I want to talk about too, something you had mentioned earlier, is the shame, not wanting, nobody likes feeling shame, whether you're a covert narcissist or just a normal, healthy human being. It's something that nobody's like, all right, shame. I mean, I guess unless you're really sadistic or sadomasochistic or something, but if you're not that, and you're not into shame, you don't want to feel it. And obviously the patterns of behavior in a narcissist, and particularly I'm thinking about like Alec Murdaugh, and just the layer upon layer. And that's what I'm looking at, is like layer of life, of experience, of wrong deed here, wrong deed there, wrong. And it gets so deep that they don't even know who they are anymore. And that's where you kind of, I think, go back to they don't have that sense of self. But is that why it's so much more prevalent in a narcissistic personality disorder or a covert narcissist or someone that is really there, that it gets so deep and it's so hard to reach them and it's so hard for them to pull themselves out of that world to get healthy because they've layered it so deep? And if you start cracking one of them, you got to look at all of them and go back and say, oh my God, like this has been my life. This has been how I've treated everybody or how I've handled all these things. And that's a lot to take on. Whereas probably more of a healthy individual, little layer of shame here, there, but you kind of, you go through life, you correct it, you try and move on, you try and fix those problems, and it doesn't build up to, you know, the Leaning Tower of Pisa. You know, it's like a thin layer of Kleenex that you're like, okay, we all screw up. We can all have shame. We can all, you know, own up to that, but because they don't, and it gets so big, is that why it's so difficult?
Partially, I would say. I mean, they're so defended against the shame that they will do everything they can not to feel it. However, the flip side is you may be giving them a little bit more benefit of the doubt. That I don't think that they're it's about the shame of actually recognizing how they've treated other people They just don't consider how other people are feeling. There's the more on the malignant side that you get, the less empathy there is, like genuinely unable to feel it. Covert nurses can mask and pretend to be empathetic, but they actually don't feel what other people are feeling or can recognize what other people are feeling. So I don't think it's about protecting themselves against that reality. It's more protecting themselves against other people thinking badly of them.
Interesting.
So I'm going to keep up with the lies. I mean, they lie about everything, about stupid things that you don't need to lie about.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep up with this. I'm going to do the next thing that's going to put me in the best light. I mean, I think Alec Murdoch is a perfect example of that, right? Like the world was crashing down. And so let me create, well, one, let me take out my rage against the person and people who are starting to crumble my facade, right? And then also I'll try and garner some sympathy. Mm-hmm. And then when that's starting to not work so well, then okay, I will pretend that I'm suicidal. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I don't know if he was pretending or not, but it's the next thing to try and keep himself in a good light. Even his apologies on stand or taking accountability, I guess, was more about victim, right? And he was playing the victim.
Sure.
I did it because of the drugs. It's let me garner sympathy from you. So it's really about maintaining that appearance and trying to maintain that control over how other people see you.
Yeah, that's interesting. The obsession there of image, from the outside, and is it always about people that are close to you, that I care about how people who are close to me view me or how they think about me, or is it just more so like public in general, like a complete stranger has the same amount of weight as a sibling or a family member or something of that nature in terms of image and how it affects them?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they care far more about public image than they do about the people who are close to them. The people who are close to them, they'll do more of that devaluing and manipulating so that, the people who are close to them actually see the harsh sides of them. But, bring that same person who maybe was saying snide comments and being really sarcastic to their spouse and put them in a dinner party, and they're going to be saying kind things to their spouse and they're going to be putting on this appearance. So it's far more about what the general public thinks of them than it is about the people who are close to them. The people who are close to them, they already have.
Yeah.
They've already trapped them. So they can do whatever they want to them. It's about maintaining that public appearance,
which goes against like all ways of healthy thinking of like, you'd be thinking like the people close to you are the ones you want to, you'd be most concerned about your image too. And you'd want to be thought of in a positive light, not, just some random people down the road or what have you that are on social media or something of that nature.
Sick of the ads?
We opt to.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.